And welcome to the Rob Call Bottom Up Radio Show, Part 2. And my guest for this part of the show is Greg Palast. He's an investigative journalist. He writes a weekly column for Vice Magazine and also reports for the BBC and The Guardian, among others. You can read his reports at gregpalast.com. That's GREGPALAST.com. Greg is the author of the New York Times bestsellers Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Armed Madhouse, and the highly acclaimed Vulture's Picnic. He's best known in the U.S. for uncovering Catherine Harris's purge of black voters from Florida's voter rolls in 2000. Great to have you back on the show, Greg.
Always great with you, Bob.
So, you have a new article out, Larry Summers and the Secret Endgame Memo.
Yeah.
And you say that the memo is so explosive, so sick, and plain evil, I just couldn't believe it. And the memo confirmed every conspiracy freak's fantasy. So tell us about it.
Okay, for those of you who are conspiracy freaks, or as in my case, a conspiracy expert, believe it or not, I used to actually have a job as doing racketeering conspiracy cases for the U.S. government. So I'm actually a conspiracy expert. Well paid at that.
Talk into the phone a little closer, too, okay?
Yes. So the story is Larry Summers, and let's remember who he is. He was Secretary of Treasury under Clinton, the guy who deregulated the banks. You know how well that turned out. Then he was economics czar in the first term of Obama, and we now have fewer people in America working than 4 years ago. But at least the unemployment rate's gone down because fewer people are even trying to work. And then he is now Obama's lead choice to be head of the Federal Reserve Board to take the place of Ben Bernanke. And I know you thought it was really hard to get anything as bad as Bernanke, but he found him, searched high and low, and asked Robert Rubin of Citibank and Goldman Sachs, what should we do? So they're looking at Larry Summers. But the thing about Larry Summers that I've been, as an investigative reporter, I got my hands on a memo that was called the Endgame Memo, because it said, we are approaching the end game. And it's a letter to Summers. It's a confidential State Department memo that goes from Tim Geithner. And you remember who that guy is. This is the guy that decided to commit Harry Caray and he was going to take the American economy with him, but he did finally get replaced as Obama's Secretary of Treasury.
And he was another Robert Rubin acolyte, Obama's appointees.
All of Obama's appointees are Rubin proteges, except for Penny Pritzker, and Rubin is her protege. That's another story, which you should look up at gregpalast.com. But Larry Summers received a letter while he was actually still under Rubin as deputy Treasury Secretary, about to become Treasury Secretary. And Geithner was given the weird title of Ambassador to the World Trade Organization. Now, why would Rubin basically send his toy boy, Geithner? And Rubin was the Secretary of the Treasury at the time. He'd come out of Goldman Sachs. He was CEO. Bush came in and changed all that. He put it in the other CEO of Goldman Sachs, Henry Paulson. But
now, who was
Rubin
send, Secretary of the Treasury under?
He was under Bill Clinton. I know it's really painful as a guy who's known as the Bush-bashing writer to say that it wasn't Bush's fault that the economy fell. That was Bill Clinton. It's okay. We get another chance at it with Billary. But the point of this memo, and you can actually read this internal memo that I got a hold of at gregpalast.com, the point of the memo is that Geithner is telling Summers, time to get back to the boys, time to speak to the five big bankers, the head of Goldman Sachs, the head of Bank of America, the head of Citibank, and then when Merrill was Merrill Lynch, and J.P. Morgan. And the idea was that these guys would launch their lobbyist armies, and they were referring to, clearly there was a reference to meetings, secret meetings that the head of Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Citibank, et cetera, were having with Summers and Rubin and Geithner. What were they meeting about? Deregulation of the banks, which of course brought the planet to its knees. But one of the reasons it brought the planet to its knees, and by the way, this is why I say it's a conspiracy freak's dream, is that there clearly were meetings between the top Treasury officials and America's top bankers held in secret. They're allowed to have, you know, public meetings, but these were secret meetings that no one was supposed to know about. And what their concern was not that they would deregulate the banks of the U.S. That was easy. They owned Clinton, and they owned the Republican Party, so it was, you know, deregulating U.S. banks is nothing. But what's the point of deregulating U.S. banks if smart money is going to put their money in safer countries where regulations would still protect money? So they had to eliminate regulations in the rest of the planet. That's 156 nations. So how do you deregulate banks in 156 nations at one time? And the answer was FSA, Financial Services Agreement. It was a brilliant, devious, sick idea that absolutely worked. What they did was they took what was considered like a kind of unknown, benign part of the World Trade Organization treaties called the Financial Services Agreement, which basically was to keep kind of, you know, trade in services, you know, like selling consulting services, insurance, like one big thing was airliner repairs, things like that. That's what we call a service, right? Like you call the Maytag man. That's a service. They came up with another idea, that derivatives, these pieces of financial toxic crap, that derivative securities were a service and that they were a financial service product. And what they did was rewrite the Financial Services Agreement so that if you wanted to sell bananas, like they told Ecuador, which it is and was a banana republic, it relies on selling bananas to America, you want to sell us your bananas, you have to sign the Financial Services Agreement, or you will end up feeding your bananas to the monkeys and you will go bankrupt. 156 nations were threatened with effective embargo of their products if they didn't sign on the Financial Services Agreement. And the purpose was, what did we get as Americans? Nothing. What the banks got, though, was the right. Every one of these banks now had the right to operate in any country they wanted. Before that, banks were tended to be national and local. Now Citibank could operate in Botswana. These nations were required. It used to be that the World Trade Organization was about trade in goods, you know, your cars for my computers. This was a new business entirely in which we were telling the world that they had to trade in our bads, our toxic financial assets. So we are packaging up, when I say we, Bank of America, Citibank, Goldman Sachs were packaging up mortgages, subprime mortgages, which were complete garbage, packaging them up into securities and selling them to the rest of the world. And the FSA required nations to agree to accept these so-called products, financial products, or they would be cut off and their economies would be destroyed. Every nation on the planet went along. That was part of WTO. It's 156 nations. Every single nation caved in except for one, and that was Brazil, because they had the new leftist socialist workers leader, Lula, just took over. And he says, no way. There will be no derivatives trading in Brazil. Our banks will not be allowed to securitize mortgages and play with this toxic crap. J.P. Morgan will not be allowed to operate in Brazil. That's it. And when the world economy collapsed because of the financial implosion in 2007, Brazil was the one standing Western economy to thrive while everyone else was dying. But they almost took down Brazil because the European Union and others threatened to basically operate an embargo of Brazilian orange juice and Brazilian goods unless they agreed to open up their banks to toxic crap, and they didn't. So what I'm saying is Larry Summers was the guy behind this whole thing, working as the banks. He was just a glove puppet. The five fingers inside Larry Summers are the five big bankers, and all he is the puppet. And that's still true. It was true then. It's true today. And they paid him off handsomely after he left the Treasury under Clinton. He went off, and he's a Harvard professor, right? He goes off, and he made his net worth is over $30 million. Then he goes back into the Obama administration, goes out, and just last year alone, his net worth increased by $7 million. Even the New York Times, which loves this type of stuff, was saying, why is he getting involved in these sickening conflict of interest? Where did he suddenly get $7 million? It was from payments from groups like Goldman Sachs and Citibank to be their so-called consultant, right? This is the guy who deregulated the bank. Citibank, which is a very profitable entity, when deregulation occurred, they mixed their commercial bank with investment banking operations and went bankrupt. We ended up putting nearly over a trillion dollars in loan guarantees went to Citibank, and $50 billion in bailout money went to Citibank. They went bankrupt, but they paid Robert Rubin $126 million. Rubin turns around and hires Summers as a so-called consultant. So in other words, we paid billions, tens of billions of bailout money, over a trillion in guarantees these guys make out, with nearly $250 million in fees between Rubin, Geithner, and Summers. Insane. This is, and the memo is a route into that business.
Now, you flew to Geneva to talk with Secretary General of the World Trade Organization, Pascal Lamy, about this. What did you learn? What did he say?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, I mean, I have access to, you know, world leaders and others that many people don't because of my position with BBC. And I was able to wangle a meeting with the Secretary General of the World Trade Organization. You know, I have to always worry that someone's going to throw some BS document at me. Oh, one way, by the way, the names of the five bankers, you know, by the way, including at the time John Corzine, who was head of Goldman Sachs and is now hopefully on his way to prison, their personal numbers were in there, and I called them. And the first one I got was, you know, I actually got to read the head of I actually got personally to the chairman of Citibank, no secretary of anything. These are their personal numbers that we got a hold of. Then I got as soon as they found out it wasn't Larry, I was cut off, and all the numbers were suddenly changed, of course. But the internal numbers were the private numbers that Larry Summers were using were for real. And by the way, the reason Geithner sent him the numbers is this way the calls could be kept out of the public record and therefore not subject to Freedom of Information requests. He didn't want Summers calling his office to get these numbers. This is all private stuff, off the record, outside normal dialing channels, right?
Isn't that illegal?
If Larry Summers does it, it isn't. It's legal because it may have been criminal. See, think of all the things that the banks did: securitize mortgages, issue debt 33-1 compared to their capital base. All these things, by the way, and shifting capital across borders. These were actual crimes. What Summers did was decriminalize this activity. So these are criminal activities which he decriminalized. And in fact, the merger of Citibank with the investment banking operation of Travelers, operation occurred before the law was changed. So what they did was that they broke the law and then had the law changed. So what Summers did is he breaks the law and then has the law changed. That's how they operate. So, you know, you could say it's illegal, but I don't see anyone reading him his rights. They are the guys making a ton of money, and Obama wants to put him as head of the Federal Reserve Board. Yes, when you read this, when you read this memo, secret meetings which are not made part of the public record. Now, if you're meeting with, if you're a government agent and you're meeting with an outside party, I did many FOIA requests on the Clintons. This should have been, I should have received this through a FOIA request, and I didn't. They hid this. That's it. That is absolutely stone cold illegal. But given that they were stealing the entire planet, violating a couple rules about open government seemed pretty minor. But I did have to fly, so I made the calls. Obviously, Summers wouldn't speak to me, but then I flew to Geneva with my sidekick, Miss Badpenny, because she's Swiss and speaks all the languages that we need there, and met with the Director General of of the World Trade Organization. I want to find out how they do these things. First thing, Pascal Lamy, he says, Mr. Palast, we are not the evil cabal of bankers making up rules in secret in cigar smoke-filled rooms. And then I showed him the documents, and he was right. There were no cigars, but everything else, you know. He thought it was... Lamy doesn't laugh very often. But as soon as he saw the name Larry Summers and saw the list of the bankers, it was like the jig was up. So what he said was the WTO, he was trying to get out of it by saying the WTO is a democratic, is an open institution, but if certain countries like, you know, China and Syria and the United States don't follow democratic rules, he says, well, you got to take that issue down the street to the World Court on Human Rights. So he basically said, if you guys don't follow basic democratic rules and the most basic protections of human rights, and you want to divide up the world in a smoke-filled room, go ahead. So obviously he knew. I did enjoy. Slapping down the documents and the others, including the internal document from the European Union to punish Brazil for not opening up its banks to the toxic poisons. What goes around comes around. Of course, the Royal Bank of Scotland, the biggest bank in England, went bankrupt in this scheme, and they were taken over by the government. Not that anyone lost their bonuses, but you know. So the important thing is that Larry Summers is the guy who is at the center of this, of not only deregulation, but the secret plan to deregulate the entire planet, do it through a backdoor, do it through intimidation of other nations. The only nation that came out okay was China. China signed, but in return, got an agreement to open up the U.S. auto parts industry and other manufacturing to their products. Almost every auto parts, well, the Delphi Auto Division moved in its entirety, General Motors Auto Division sold off, moved in its entirety, lock, stock, and mufflers to China. That was 35,000 jobs. And all 2 million manufacturing jobs shifted to China. If you're wondering why did we open our markets to a prison labor economy? And the answer is, what did we get in return? We got the right to sell toxic acids to the Chinese. And after they got burned a bit, they had riots in China. And then they said, the hell with the FSA. So China doesn't follow the trade agreement anymore. And I can't blame them.
You know, I've always thought that these trade agreements, whether it's the World Trade Organization or NAFTA or CAFTA, or the most frightening one of them all, TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, they're designed for a handful of transnational companies like the five big banks. And they're absolutely not created, or we don't sign on with them to help the American people.
Right. What I mean, remember, we don't have a trade deficit with China. We have a trade deficit with Walmart. Walmart imports 97% of its product, mostly from China. Okay, our problem is not China. Our problem is Walmart. Okay, so they're exporting our jobs. They have, and of course they play games like they had last time I checked, and that was 10 years ago. They had 700 factories under contract in China, 700, and at the time they had exactly zero under contract in the United States, zero, and. You know, they had a rule, you had to sign off pieces of paper that said no child labor, no prison labor. And a guy named Harry Hu, who had broken out of a Chinese prison, actually broke back in to a Chinese prison with a video camera to prove that Walmart products are being made in Chinese prisons. And, it's not about – we don't trade with other nations. For example, like China, we buy products from other nations and we sell them toxic assets. We dump them on these nations, and that has destroyed several, more than one economy. And in fact, in the case of the financial services agreement, which required nations like Greece, for example, to open up its market to toxic to the derivatives trade. Well, that allowed other shenanigans. In the case of Greece, for example, the Greek government cut a secret euro derivatives trade deal with Goldman Sachs. The result of that was to hide, it was a total fraud, a complete flim-flam to hide the deficits of the Greek government. When that got exposed, the Greek economy collapsed because no one would, all the people who lent Greece money had been cheated. And so now they demanded basically usurious rates for Greece to borrow money. That led to the complete implosion of the economy. The average Greek owns $14,000 equivalent per family. $14,000 per family in Greece. You know, that's half of their average income per year to foreign bondholders. And it started with this scam done by this derivative scam put together by Goldman Sachs, which Goldman Sachs got almost $500 million in fees, by the way. And if they'd done it in the U.S., I can tell you that at least under the U.S. rules, I would like to think, like I say, my old racketeering work for the government, that you'd be put in irons. I mean, this is the type of crime that you go to jail but I guess that's not illegal anymore. Only if you're Bradley Manning is it illegal to provide the truth. But when you commit a fraud, that is, you professionally lie to make money, that's now permissible. But I just wanted people to, in my article on Larry Summers and the memo, know two things. One, this is the guy that Obama wants to put in charge of our economy, the head of the Federal Reserve. Second, this is how I wanted people to see exactly how the system works. And when you think that these guys get together and secretly conspire, well, there's the meeting, there's the phone numbers, there's the people, there's their private phone numbers, there's the guys who are dialing the phones. And so you know, if you think that they conspire against us, here's the notes, right? It's right there in front of you. And they're pushing it in your face by even suggesting Larry Summers as the head of the Federal Reserve.
Well, let's talk about Obama and his role and connection in this. What can you tell us about where he fits into this picture?
Well, you know, we know Larry Summers is glove puppet, and I can name the five fingers, you know, from Goldman, from Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Citibank, Merrill. Those are the five fingers in that glove puppet. But there's, you know, you can't have, what's the sound of one glove puppet clapping? You need a president. So, you know, Obama is has put a nice, happy black face on basically wholesale financial shenanigans. His Secretary of Commerce. I mean, let's remember, who the hell is Barack Obama, right? 4 years earlier, he was a couple years earlier, he was a state senator from Illinois, from Chicago. State senators from Chicago don't become presidents of the United States, okay? That's not how it works. So who found this guy, okay? Remember he was we're the change he was looking for or whatever. Who found this guy? Who decided that they had that to put hope into him? The answer was a woman named Penny Pritzker. Obama represented the South Side of Chicago in the state legislature, a real moral cesspool there. And she ran basically a loan sharking operation masquerading as a bank called Superior Bank. It was so bad, and think of all the evil banks you had, it was so bad that the feds put them out of business and charged her and her family personally $400 million. Now, you and me, Rob, if we had to pay a $500 million fine, that's almost $500 million. That'd make a difference. To Penny Pritzker meant nothing. She's worth $2 billion, so she had to give up a little bit of it.
And I was just looking at the Forbes list of the top billionaires. It's not just Penny. I mean, there are three or four or five other Pritzkers. You put them all together, they're worth at least $10 or $12 billion between
them.
Yeah,
they're up there. They're getting towards Coke territory. And the thing is, now, you have to understand, this is a bankster of the worst order. This woman had, in his district, in Obama's district, was one of the inventors of the subprime mortgage, one of the people that first invented systematic steering of black people into overpriced mortgages. She's caused more damage to black Americans than any guy ever wearing a white sheet. And this is the person that picked out Barack Obama to run for Senate and president. And what she did was, the whole, remember the whole myth that this guy came out of nowhere, right? Where did this guy come from? That, you know, suddenly he just had a bunch of tiny donors on the internet. Give me a break. This guy was picked out by Penny Pritzker. His district was reshaped from the poor people of Southside who couldn't stomach this guy to the Gold Coast and the millionaires. Introduced him to, you know, to Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan, and then, most importantly, Robert Rubin. Rubin blessed him. Remember, the reason why Obama beat Hillary Clinton, who was a lock-on for the Democratic nomination, is that Rubin backed Obama, not Clinton, because Obama, because Hillary was a little bit nervous about backing her hubby's deregulation of banks. It didn't work out too well. But Obama was happy to protect these guys completely. So when Rubin backed Obama, that was the big, big signal that finance had to go with Obama. And let's not forget that the banks and finance industry gave Obama $5 for everyone that went to Republicans. Have you ever, I mean, a Democrat earning, you know, pulling in 5-1 from the big bankers on his first campaign. And that was organized by Penny Pritzker, who was one step out of prison, you know, away from prison. And now he made her commerce secretary. And, of course, Robert Rubin, who, because he had taken $126 million from Citibank, was probably a bad choice to return as secretary of treasury. So his protege, Larry Summers, was put in as he couldn't get confirmed. So he was given the title of economic czar, so he wouldn't have to go through a confirmation process. And Tim Geithner, the guy that did the evil deed in Geneva at the World Trade Organization, was rewarded with the post of Secretary of Treasury. People said, who's this guy Geithner? Where did he come from from outer space? The answer was he did exactly what the boys wanted to do in Geneva. And he was, of course, the one who then went to the Federal Reserve Board of New York and appointed there, by the way, by George Bush. These are Bush people, too, right? They don't have parties. And he's the guy that ended up Secretary of Treasury. So now we're back with Summers, who is – and by the way, on top of everything else, if he was a manipulator – self-dealer, a guy who could have secret evil meetings, stuffed his pockets with cash, all that. You know what? Make him head of the Federal Reserve. That wouldn't be – you know what? By itself, that doesn't disqualify him. Ultimately, what I didn't spend my time on in the article exposing what he did is that he's unqualified, which is that he's a guy who has consistently guessed horribly, disastrously wrong on the direction of the economy. He told Obama, when Obama was said, what's our program to end the foreclosure crisis in America, he and Geithner said to Obama, don't do anything, the economy will recover and the housing will boom and foreclosures will melt away. 4 million families lost their homes. 4 million families lost their homes.
Greg, you told me you'd give me a half an hour. We've hit a half an hour, and I got to at least do a station ID.
Okay.
We can continue a bit, but I got to do the station ID. This is the Rock Call Bottom Up Radio Show, WNJC 1360 AM, sponsored by opednews.com. If you came in the middle of this show and you want to catch the beginning of it, go to opednews.com/podcasts with an S on the end, or Rob Call, K-A-L-L, at iTunes, and you'll find the whole interview there. Give it a day. It doesn't always pop up over in the same night, but I'm going to try to get it up later this evening. Okay, so I've been talking with Greg Palast. I always get your name wrong. I'm sorry, Greg.
Both ways is correct. Greg Palast or Greg Palast. Some of my family use the name Palast, but Greg Palast.
Okay.
Fine.
And we've been talking about Larry Summers and that he's an even bigger SOB piece of, I can't use that word, scum than you probably thought if you're a regular listener on the show. And I ask you the question about where does Obama fit in this, and you told us about how Penny Pritzker, who had a $400 million fine because of what she did to the poor people in Chicago, got together with Robert Rubin, and they backed Obama over Hillary. But you mentioned that the poor people in the South Side of Chicago hated Obama, and I wanted to understand that. Why did they hate Obama?
Well, remember, he ran for Congress and lost in the South Side. Then he became state senator, not by suppressing the black vote. He he went after his the incumbent. He went after and challenged the incumbent's right to be on the ballot through his cockamamie, highly funded by his rich friends, challenge of the signatures to put the incumbent back on the ballot. So he ran unopposed, and then he became.
Well, wait. Let me just get this straight. So you're saying that Obama entered the political scene by suppressing votes?
Yes. So when we talk about vote suppression and stopping black people from voting, Obama's an expert, because that's how he took office as state senator. Then Penny Pritzker found him, moved his district up to the Gold Coast, and maneuvered him to run for Senate, where again he ran basically unopposed because the Republican was caught in a videotape in an orgy. So his own party attempted to withdraw his name from the ballot, and when he refused to remove his name from the ballot, the Republican Party said, we will not back him. So basically his opponent's campaign stopped cold. So this guy who, you know, no one cared about, he got an easy Democratic nomination. So basically Obama's – the only two offices that he held, he ran for effectively unopposed. The one he ran for where he was opposed, he lost for Congress. This is all created by Penny Pritzker and Robert Rubin with Jamie Dimon, because Jamie Dimon's operation was before he took over J.P. Morgan. His base was Chemical Bank out of Chicago. So you have mafia really running the Obama operation. And that's where we suddenly get, you know, Barry Obama suddenly becomes, a hope and change. No one had ever heard of this guy. Who created Obama? And no one seems to be ever want to face that question. And we know the answer because he's still paying back. He's still paying these people back.
Well, you just used the term the Chicago banking mafia. Are you referring to the Pritzkers or anybody else? Who's the
Pritzkers and Jamie Dimon, and I was bringing Robert Rubin, of course, who is more New York than. Or New York Washington axis. Now, by the way, his new job is head of the chairman of the Council of Foreign Relations, where he just hired Timmy Geithner.
This is Jamie Dimon or Robert Rubin?
Robert Rubin took over the Council of Foreign Relations, and then just has just hired Tim Geithner. So you know, it's a little they're very friendly towards each other. Let's put it that way. You basically have the guys in the Treasury, and don't forget, Robert Rubin, you'll love this, okay? This is very important to understand Larry Summers and Robert Rubin. Robert Rubin is Secretary of the Treasury. Larry Summers is his deputy. Geithner is Summers' deputy and gopher. And Rubin turns the other way when the biggest bank in the United States, Citibank, illegally combines with an investment bank. We have a law called the Glass-Steagall Act. We had a law called the Glass-Steagall Act in which you couldn't let casinos, which are what investment banks are, merge with piggy banks, which are commercial savings banks, because for a simple reason, the people of the United States insure savings accounts. So because we say because we insure savings accounts at commercial banks and savings banks and credit unions, we say these banks cannot go to Vegas for a weekend. But basically, investment banks are gambling institutions. White shoe gambling institutions, but gambling institutions nonetheless. And by combining gambling, when you basically replace a bank vault with a roulette wheel, the results were not surprising. Rubin let this illegal merger take place, creating this monstrosity, this trillion-dollar monstrosity, illegal monstrosity called Citigroup. He then resigns as Secretary of Treasury and within weeks becomes director and then co-chairman of Citigroup, and they pay him $126 million. Now, if that happened in China, we would be talking about the corrupt Chinese system, right? But because no one in China is actually going to get $126 million. So if you break – if the payoff is over $100 million, it's no longer corrupt. It's called being a statesman. What I like about of course Summers takes over as Secretary of Treasury under Clinton, and instead of saying reading Rubin his rights, Summers then leaves the Treasury and gets a fat contract with Citibank. And don't forget that. And then on top of it, then Timmy Geithner. Then when Obama comes in, of course, he makes their third man, Timmy Geithner, the Secretary of Treasury. And don't forget that when now, if it all worked out fine, if America prospered through this, even if they enriched themselves, fine. You know, I can, you know, corruption is what makes, is the grease, maybe it's the lubricant we need. But that's not what happened. Citibank collapsed. The United States government bailed it out with $50 billion, in, $50 billion direct cash bailout money under TARP. And the Federal Reserve Board provided a guarantee of Citibank derivatives gambles, provided a $1 trillion guarantee. So in other words, the Treasury, Rubin's Treasury, backed his operation, which he'd run into the ground, and he'd picked up this monster fee. So in other words, he gets $126 million from a company which is bankrupt and only alive because of the U.S. taxpayers forking over, not even forking, shoveling over cash as fast as it can be printed by the Fed. This is the game that's being played, and what just makes my jaw drop is that Obama's talking about bringing this guy in so that, remember, the head of the Fed stays there for 10 years, and that means that if we get rid of Obama, we will have this disease on the economic and body politic called Larry Summers. In fact, years ago, before Summers even got
involved, wait. We're going to have to wrap soon. But isn't it true that the comedy group, better known as the U.S. Congress, has to authorize the appointment of the head of the Fed?
The United States Senate has to confirm.
The Senate.
And what is making me, you know, the only complaint we've heard so far is that Nancy Pelosi is not a senator, has written a letter signed by several senators saying, well, we really should have a woman. And there is actually a highly qualified woman, Janet Yellen, who, it's interesting, the Wall Street Journal did a survey to take all 15 members of the Federal Reserve Board, write down, you know, keep a record of their estimates of future unemployment and inflation. Out of 15 Fed members, Yellen was the only one that got it right. And, of course, this goes back to there's a great irony in this, because Larry Summers lost his position as president of Harvard when he said women were simply not bright enough to work and succeed in the sciences because they really couldn't understand numbers. The only Fed member who got it right, and it wasn't Larry Summers, he was dead wrong on everything, was the woman on the board, Janet Yellen. So unfortunately, what I don't like is that Janet Yellen is not qualified to be Fed chief because she's got a vagina. She's qualified because she's got a brain, unlike Larry Summers.
Wait. Let me just repeat your quote there. I assume you mean that according to Summers' ideas, Janet Yellen is not qualified to be the Fed chief because she has a vagina.
Yeah. But,
all right,
we've
got
to
wrap.
Question. So go to my site, you can read more and actually see the memos and get sick yourself.
So one last question. Is the rot starts from the head.
Mm-hmm.
Is Rubin the guy at the top? Who's at the top? What is their ultimate big picture when it comes to the top-down story of this story?
The new five fingers in the glove, in these glove puppets, whether it's Summers or Obama, you have to begin with Rubin, and second would be Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan, whom Obama calls my favorite banker, and hopefully we'll be reading him his rights soon. So those are really the two guys who are tops. And then the third, you have to go to United Bank of Switzerland, UBS, which is unbelievably influential with the Obama administration.
Who is that?
Well, the U.S. chief of UBS, who is Obama's big golfing partner, in fact, is playing golf with him this week Cape Cod, has a tremendous influence over Obama. And so between the United Bank of Switzerland, Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan, and Rubin, who is just the grise eminence of foreign policy and political economy, and of course former co-chairman of Citibank and co-CEO of Goldman Sachs, those are probably your three most powerful banker CEOs in America and in the world, and they are really calling the shots. And there's nothing that Obama would ever say or do if they said otherwise. So it's very
Obama.
It's very interesting.
So Obama would do whatever they tell them to do.
Yeah, and it's interesting because right now there's a split in finance. If you read actually my book Vulture's Picnic, you get kind of the inside. And also in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, my latest bestseller, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits has a story about there's an internal fight within finance now in which UBS, J.P. Morgan, Citibank, and the gang, the fingers in Obama's glove. Are at war with the Republican investment bankers, vulture investment bankers, people you've never heard of, like Paul Singer and John Paulson. That's not Hank Paulson, but a guy named John Paulson. Very powerful guys. These are behind the Republicans, and there's this huge, huge, and behind, by the way, Chris Christie, and their push, and these are and they're mobbed up with the Koch brothers. So this huge battle within finance, the upper reaches of the elite right now, which is very, very fascinating. That's what I'm going to be covering and looking at. So you go to GregPalast.com, you can kind of follow that. The internal war within the finance community that's going on. So, in fact, Obama's actually, and you know, like I say, I don't mind if these guys are stealing everything as long as they give us a piece and they don't throw us overboard. There are even more scary mothers out there than Rubin, believe it or not. So read Vulture's Picnic or Billionaires and Ballot Bandits to get more of that story. But yeah, they're really scary guys. There's even worse choices, believe it or not, than even Larry Summers.
I believe it. I've been doing a series of articles on sociopaths and psychopaths, and they fit the profile there.
Exactly. So one final thing on just Larry Summers, though. I once called him that he's not actually human. He is he's a collection of aliens sent here to turn the human race into a cheap source of protein. At least I got to laugh at that one. Okay, so I'll another time, I'd be happy to come back on and tell you the next part of the story.
One last thing I'm going to throw at you is, I've been talking with Tom Hartman and a few other people about this idea of the No Billionaires campaign. Have you heard about it?
No, I like the idea. I said the way to stop billionaires from stealing the economy is to eliminate billionaires. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're gonna do something with this. We've got to actually turn it into a campaign to make it illegal to be a billionaire. Tom's been working on it, and I've been working on it, and there are a couple others. We'll have to have some further conversations on that.
Well, it's successful. It's at least I know that you've been at least partly successful because I can tell you I'm not a billionaire.
Yeah, me either. I'm going to sign off, and then hang on with me after I sign off just a minute.
Gotcha.
But thanks so much for being back again. I think you're my most frequent guest on the show. It's Rob Call, Bottom Up Radio Show, WNJC 1360M. Thank you.